Bird strikes are a problem as old as aviation itself. Now, what can we do about it? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. Yesterday, I began a discussion about bird strikes with Steve Osmick, who is a full-time wildlife biologist on the staff of the Port of Seattle. We discussed lots of background on the hazards birds and other wildlife present to pilots, but we ran out of time before we got the chance to talk about the new radar test program, which has started at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. Steve, welcome back, and thanks for making some more time for us today.
Thank you.
What is avian radar? I mean, this sounds kind of interesting. Is this something that is put on aircraft, or is this something that's put at an airport?
The avian radars that we're using are really meant to be used at airports. They are really nothing more than some marine radars, the regular marine radar that you would find on some of the larger boats or even fishing vessels out in our Puget Sound area. We have, I'm sure, several operating out there right now. The difference is that when the radar data comes in, it's digitized, and with a group, a Canadian firm out of Ontario, Canada, Exhibitor Radar Technologies, they digitize it, and they can produce and write various algorithms that detect bird presence. And we're also getting ground movement vehicles. We're getting some aircraft as well. But it's amazing the resolution. In fact, in times where you have a lot of insect activity, we're also picking up insects too. So the capabilities are great, from large Canada geese out to 5-6 miles out to some smaller birds that are closer into the airport even.
You know, when I think about all the work that's been done over the past couple of decades on stealth technology, it's amazing to me that a radar could be built that would detect insects or even a goose at 5 miles.
Yeah, radar have come a long ways over the years. But one thing that I found interesting is that they first realized radars were picking up birds in World War II. In fact, there were a couple of big scares because they thought there were aircraft coming in. But then again, the aircraft and the birds were showing up on the radar screen in a similar way. So they really couldn't tell what they were until they got out and they took a look with their binoculars that they were, in fact, birds and not aircraft coming in. So in the same regard, we have some marine radars right now that are picking up some large birds and small birds. And at this point, we're really not able to differentiate size. But at least we know that there's some avian biomass out there. And we're working on filters and working on ways that we can actually detect mass in the sky as opposed to just movements.
Now, how useful is it to know this? Is this something that ends up going into immediate warnings, or is this something that gets archived and used for long-term studies?
Well, in fact, it's both. We are archiving all the data, and in that way, we'll be able to look at, in fact, we've already done that, look at bird movements and pathways across the airport. We can start finding out what times a day that those flights are occurring at. And what's even more impressive is that, you know, you can go on a foggy day like we're having right now, we're still able to pick up birds, and certainly at night, something you certainly can't do with a naked eye.
What do you do if you, I mean, what are the implications for airport planners or air traffic control if you do find out that there is a particular time? I mean, what if you find out, for example, I would imagine that there's going to be some spikes in morning and afternoon, which may correspond to peak travel times as well. How do you adjust what you do or develop bird mitigation efforts that will allow the airport to keep functioning on some kind of schedule that matches people's schedule?
A lot of those questions that you're asking, we're still asking ourselves too. The first and foremost thing that we need to do is to make sure that these avian radars really do work as like some of the vendors say they do. And if we do find out, and so far we are, that we can see bird movements at the opposite end of the airport when I can't see it with my naked eye, what that allows me to do is go over there and check it out. So initially, what we're using it for today in our airport operations standpoint is it allows us to see areas and go out, provide us with some early warning or detection that we can go out and inspect what these potential hazards are. And in that way, we can implement our wildlife control on birds and in areas that perhaps we wouldn't have done because we were at the other end of the airport for another half hour, 15 minutes later. But the other thing it allows us to do, too, is when we start seeing birds like bald eagles flying over the airport, and I can get a visual because I'm alerted because of the radar, I can call up to the tower immediately and tell them significant bird activities, northwest quadrant of the airport. And so I can convey that real information to the tower so they can pass it on to the pilots.
Is that something that you're staffed up to do at this point, or is that going to maybe require rethinking how you staff the operation there? Because obviously that's not your only job.
Well, yeah, for me, I'm a full-time wildlife biologist here, but you're right. I mean, it is not my job to sit there and look at the radar screen. I've always argued that you might be better off having somebody out there looking as opposed to looking at a radar screen. But one thing that is of value is to have a computer in, for instance, one of the airport operations specialists vehicles. And as they're doing their other activities and they can glance up and look at this radar, it can alert them to the fact that, yeah, maybe I'm going to head over to the west side of the airport now as opposed to waiting 15 minutes from now because it looks like we have some bird activity there. We actually hope that we can get this Wi-Fi network up and running and computers and vehicles by the end of this year.
Are we ever going to get to the point, do you think, where we have something that's the equivalent of TCAS in an airplane, which instead of watching for other aircraft traffic, is watching for bird traffic?
You know, we may get there, and that has been discussed. And a lot of that has to do with the pilots and do they really want something else up there with them, and how does that really help them? One of the things that we've been looking at here is to incorporate it into the airport operations groups first and then see how that information can be conveyed to pilots.
We're talking avian radar and bird strike prevention with Steve Osmick, full-time wildlife biologist with the Port of Seattle. More in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with wildlife biologist Steve Osmick, who's charged with leading the effort to prevent bird strikes at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. Steve, when I talked to Perry Cooper, who's your airport media officer, he mentioned that the testing that you're doing now with avian radar was going to move to four other airports during 2009. What do you expect to learn as far as differences among different airports as this test rolls out?
I think one of the main things that we're going to learn is that one of the things that we've already got a taste of here at SeaTac, and that is every airport environment is different. Where you can place these radars is a little bit different. And the number of radars that you need to get effective coverage, I think, is going to vary greatly. And based on that, we're also going to find out essentially how we can integrate these radar data. For example, by using two or three different radars, one pointed low, one in the middle, and one high, we're going to get not only really good altitude resolution, but in those areas where two radars are picking up the same bird, then we know it's between those two elevations. So ultimately, we could get some real excellent coverage and provide information on bird movements, not just for the people who are interested in the wildlife control activities, but it could provide us with some more detailed early warning to pilots into the tower.
I guess I want to ask you about your job a little bit. If someone is interested in this topic, where do wildlife biologists come from if airports want to acquire one?
Well, recently, and it was like 2006, the FAA came out with an advisory circular. It's the 150 series, 5200-36, I believe, but it actually talks about wildlife biologist qualifications and training requirements that need to be put into the annual recurrent training for, in our case, you know, these 20 airport operations folks that we have here at the airport. So that would be a good start, just going through that advisory circular.
How did you get started in biology as a career?
Well, my history is more marine, ironically. I was working with marine mammals for 13 years. Then I worked up in Northern New York on raccoon rabies, and then LaGuardia, JFK, and then finally came over to Seattle. So I've worked with bears and deers and deer and a lot of other things. So this is the longest I've ever had any job. So that probably tells you something. It is pretty interesting.
Well, you mentioned LaGuardia. I didn't realize you had direct experience in that area. What are the unique challenges that that face that area? I've been told there's an actual bird sanctuary not too far from the airport.
Yeah, it's with LaGuardia and JFK both. You know, there are protected areas. They right are alongside the marine shores environments. And, you know, with Canada geese, too, there's Rikers Island, the prison, and there are geese that will molt there. They drop their flight feathers in the middle of the summer, and they hang out there, and they're fairly well protected. I think it is really important, though, to bring up that if these were geese that this A320 hit, and if they did in fact hit these birds at 1,000 feet or thereabouts, that's really about where only, I think it's 17% of the bird strikes occur at 1,000 feet and greater.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, what I'm really getting at is that once you get to that elevation of 1,000 feet, that those birds aren't really there because of habitat on the ground. They're there because they're moving most likely from point A to point B, wherever they were going. Maybe we'll never know. But and there was some indication. In fact, I heard from an NTSB interview that they were going to be looking at some of the ASR-9 data to see if those geese did in fact turn up on the flights.
Well, it's... I guess anytime we commit to sharing the atmosphere with another species, we're going to have this problem, and it'll never completely go away. These marine radars that are being used to detect birds being able to pick up insects, I don't really have a feel for this. Aside from open cockpit flying, are insects really a threat to aviation at any time?
I have not heard of them being a threat to aviation. My guess is that if you flew through a swarm of locusts or something like that, some of these dense swarms that, yeah, perhaps you could run into the same type of issues that some aircraft could have flying through volcanic ash or something. But I'm just guessing. I've not heard of insects causing problems. On the flip side, I guess I've always been surprised at how small a bird can be and still do damage. I had mentioned a killdeer, which is only about a robin size, causing mm-hmm. $57,000 worth of damage on a Metroliner.
Wow.
And then about a year or two later, we had this regular American robin, the same bird that you see in your yard, caused $80,000 to an engine of an MD-80. So it doesn't take much. And every time a small bird does cause an issue, it does make me rethink wildlife hazards on airports and what birds you shouldn't really spend a lot of effort on. why you might want to be spending that time on some other birds. So, you have to manage your time and resources and where do you put the effort. But again, I'm continually surprised at how small these birds are and still causing damage.
Well, Steve, it's been fun to talk to you. You have a job that sounds like, if you were interested in that subject matter in high school, you're kind of living the dream for some people.
Yeah, it is a good position. I'm pretty pleased.
And you're in a very interesting place to study this. We want to kind of keep your number in the Rolodex here and maybe catch up with you again as these radar tests move on down the line. And will you have any kind of feel for how it's going by the end of 2009?
Oh, I think we will. In fact, we're working on our midfield avian radar right now. We currently have two operating up on top of our airport office building, and those have been operating since August of 2007. But the one that we're putting midfield, and we've had it out there for a couple months before already, just as a trial run, has been producing just some phenomenal tracks. We're picking up birds and geese and cormorants and a variety of birds that we weren't able to pick up with the higher radar. So I'm real excited about what we're going to find out here in the near future.
All right. Well, we'll plan to stay in touch. And thanks again for taking some time out for our listeners.
Oh, you're welcome.
My guest has been Steve Osmek, who is the Port of Seattle's biologist. And if you want to find out more about the wildlife efforts at the Port of Seattle, you can browse www.portseattle.org. Or we'll provide a link for you in the data block that accompanies this AeroCast. You've been listening to a special feature from AeroNews. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.